Welcome, everyone, into Redacted on this Monday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we try to connect the dots in this crazy clown world, covering the stories the mainstream media will not cover. And the mainstream media is melting down at this hour over Trump's reinstatement to the ballot in Colorado, and of course, now Maine and other states that we're going to try to pull the shenanigans. The Supreme Court has weighed in. But what will the new strategy be for the Biden administration? Because in the next 24 hours, we have Super Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Sources are already telling us that we have Nikki Haley. Looks like she's about to pull out of the race. She's stopped campaign ads. And so was it really hinging on this Supreme Court decision for her to even stay in this race? What is the strategy going to be going forward for the Biden administration in the next 24 hours? We will reveal it to you right here on the show.
Plus, we have proof that NATO is, in fact, running the war in Ukraine. They are running the shots. These leaked tapes from German military, shocking, crazy. It should be a big upheaval. We're going to show you transcripts. It's unbelievable.
Also, we have a new member of parliament in the UK. We're very excited. George Galloway, friend of the show, is the newest member of parliament, and he is about to stir up some garbage over there. And this is not what the World Economic Forum, this is not what the globalists wanted to hear. And it was a crushing defeat for Rishi Sunak and the Conservative Party and the Labour Party in the UK. So George Galloway is going to be joining us here. What does this mean for maybe the future of England? What does this mean for the future of wokeism on the island?
Right. Speaking of wokeism, San Francisco and California having some reversed wokeism, if that's a thing. What's the reverse of wokeism?
Unwoke?
Normal.
Normal.
San Francisco is acting normal, and they are surprising even themselves. Now, San Francisco Bay Area is my hometown, so you can imagine I have a lot to say about it. All of that and more as Redacted starts right now.
Dewoked.
I don't think that doesn't work. Normal.
Normal. You've seen a lot of that though. I think now you're seeing like Hollywood this weekend with major box office numbers for Dune 2, and our friends over at Nerdrotic and I think the Critical Drinker all saying amazing movie. Finally, a non-woke Hollywood movie that's actually really good. Like maybe they're finally learning their lessons. Like
is it?
Yeah.
But I mean, okay. Yeah, I have no opinion about that.
Well, you haven't seen it.
Dune.
Yeah, I know.
I really did not like the book, so I'm not going to go watch that.
Such a great book. Such a great science fiction book.
Movies are beautiful.
Yeah.
Are they? You're ringing in on behalf. Yeah. You're giving a thumbs up. And you saw the most recent one.
Did you see two?
No, I haven't seen the second one yet. Okay. I haven't seen two yet, but I saw one, and it was absolutely gorgeous. Adelaide loved it, too.
Yeah.
I've seen it about 4 or 5 times.
Wow. Okay. All right. That's high praise. But yeah, maybe Hollywood's learning their lesson. We got a lot of woke related news to get to tonight on the show. We're going to get to that first. But we do have a daily newsletter that we publish, and it's the best newsletter in the world. You should all subscribe to it. Go there, and we publish it about 7:30, 8 a.m. on East Coast time is when you can grab it. And you can read it in about 5 or 10 minutes over your cup of coffee. It's a great way for us to stay connected with you because these big tech companies, of course, love to censor us and block us. That way, if something happens here, we're able to send you an email and we're able to connect with you. But more than that, it's a great newsletter to start your day. We cover about 4 or 5 of the big stories of the day, plus a couple of in case you missed it items, some of market news. If you were paying attention to Bitcoin, you might not have been paying attention to what's been happening to gold prices heading up to $2,100 an ounce today. So we cover all of that stuff in the newsletter. Anyway, it's free. Go to redacted.inc, not .com. Put in your email address and you'll receive a welcome email. You just need to confirm that welcome email in your inbox. Otherwise, you won't receive it tomorrow. Someone right before the show just wrote me and said, I think I'm having tech issues. I didn't receive the newsletter. And I had to write to them and say, make sure you confirm it. You just have to confirm it. So redacted.inc is the place to go for that. Well, now that the Supreme Court has told states you can't keep Trump off the ballot, Democrats are going crazy, and they're going to do whatever they can to try and stop him. We've already seen this. Just a few hours ago, Jamie Raskin, House of Representatives, says that he is working with his Democratic colleagues to push legislation forward to try to have Trump removed. I mean, it's crazy time right now. And of course, Super Tuesday is tomorrow. Nikki Haley, according to sources, is already pulling up stakes and is stopping advertising campaign now that the Supreme Court decision has come down. So is Nikki Haley out? We'll see that here, I'm sure, very, very shortly. That's gonna be the big announcement, and it will be Trump v. Biden once again, and they will do whatever they can to try to stop him. Their main strategy right now, here's what their main strategy will be starting tomorrow, officially, to use as many illegal aliens as possible to get Biden elected, reelected. Maybe that's why this Babylon Bee satirical headline hits so hard. Look at this. This is a fake photo, of course, from the Babylon Bee. Safe vote. Official drop box is being set up at the border in the United States. So you could just drop off your official ballot. It's funny because it's true. How many illegal immigrants will it take to get Joe Biden elected in 2024? It turns out not very many. We've looked at the numbers, and Democrats are counting on this strategy to keep Joe Biden in office for another 4 years. President Obama explained it very, very well, I think, that they want us to use illegals to vote, and no one will come for you. Like, if you're illegal, go and vote. If you're an illegal alien, go and vote. According to President Obama, no one will arrest you. As an illegal immigrant, when you vote, you become a citizen, according to Obama. Listen.
Many of the millennials, dreamers, undocumented citizens, and I call them citizens because they contribute to this country, are fearful of voting. So if I vote, will immigration know where I live? Will they come for my family and deport us?
Not true. Okay. And the reason is, first of all, when you vote, you are a citizen yourself, and there is not a situation where the voting rolls somehow are transferred over and people start investigating, et cetera. The sanctity of the vote is strictly confidential in terms of who you voted for. If you have a family member who maybe is undocumented, then you have an even greater reason to vote.
Oh, okay. So they don't cross-reference their databases, is what they say. That's not what Edward Snowden disclosed.
No, and you don't have to go back and even affirm that you are a citizen later, which we'll get to in just a moment. So, you know, President Obama, he's saying, just go out there and vote. If you're not an American citizen, just go and vote, according to President Obama.
But it also sounds like, what kind of backwater is this that we don't have any way to know who you are? Like, it's basically, we don't know who's voting. It's not that important, right? Yeah. It's not that.
That's like,
go ahead.
Not only can you vote, we're going to just give you $10,000 as well, you know? And I have my feelings about the election system and the 2020 election and all that stuff. But like, if you look at like the official numbers that they put forward saying how many votes Biden actually won by, it's only like a couple hundred thousand votes. So there's been 10 million, I believe at this point, immigrants that have come into the country so far.
Yeah.
So 100,000 isn't that many out of that many people.
No, and because if you think of it in large terms, right, you just think of like 10 million, right, that have come across the border, 7,000 just yesterday, as Bill Malugin from Fox News reported down there at the border. Just think of it, you think about the grand number, right, 10 million. But when you start to break it down by state, and then you start to break it down by district, and you start to think where this falls electorally, it's a different math number, right? Because then you really need to focus on, which we'll get to in a moment, like Arizona and Texas, specific purple states that they want to turn blue, and that's been the strategy all along. So Democrats right now are pulling out all the stops to make sure that you can vote no matter which country you're in, even using the power of the Justice Department to do it. Yes, the DOJ to make this happen. So this weekend, we got our clearest sign yet that the next election will be a disaster right from the mouth of Attorney General Merrick Garland. This man, of course, is in charge of the Justice Department, which is a department that is supposed to uphold justice and law and order. According to new data, Black and Hispanic voters are leaving the Democratic Party in droves.
Yes, so, we've gone over that a lot here.
Exactly. So what does the Biden administration do? They're on damage control, right? So what do they do? We've got to get one of our people. We've got to send them down to a church in Selma, Alabama. Merrick Garland, are you doing anything this weekend? Okay, go down to Selma, Alabama, go to a Black church and stand in front of those people, use them as props, and totally pander to those people. We need you. America needs you to go down and pander to black people in Selma, Alabama right now, telling them it's racist to use an ID to vote. And he has made it his mission, he told this group of churchgoers, to make sure that this doesn't happen. Listen.
The right to vote is still under attack. And that is why the Justice Department is fighting back. That is why one of the first things I did when I came into office was to double the size of the voting section of the Civil Rights Division. That is why we are challenging efforts by states and jurisdictions to implement discriminatory, burdensome, and unnecessary restrictions on access to the ballot, including those related to mail-in voting, the use of drop boxes, and voter ID requirements. That is why we are working to block the adoption of discriminatory redistricting plans that dilute the vote of black voters and other voters of color.
Maybe he was expecting some big applause right there after those comments. But there noticed there was no applause, to be honest with you. And I watched the whole speech. There was no applause after that line. Go ahead, David.
I mean, he all but said, we know you people can't get IDs. Like, who are you calling you people?
Right.
Right.
Well, that's the whole thing. They can't get IDs. They don't know where to, they don't know where the DMV is. They don't know where to go to get IDs. That's ludicrous.
That's re-scripting.
You can't find a way to get an identification in this country, apparently. Not at all. So what's weird about that whole thing is, you know, he's speaking to a group of people who overwhelmingly don't support what he's saying. In fact, the data bears this out, because three-fourths of black individuals that have been polled support using an ID to vote. 75%. Look at that number on your screen. 75%. Yes, it is the lowest of all the groups, but still 75%. That's three-fourths. And then overall, 8 in 10 Americans with a brain support using an ID to vote in elections.
Wow. That's a lot of racists.
Yeah. Look at all those racists right there that think it's irrelevant to use an ID to vote. That's an overwhelming number. Democrats have openly admitted that they can shift purple states away from Republicans towards Joe Biden, and they can do so easily by using illegal immigrants with no voter identification. Democrat Jerry Nadler of New York is just one Democrat who openly admitted during a committee hearing, we want illegal immigrants to vote.
That's not true. The New York City Council voted in December to allow this. It begins January 9, 2023. Cities in Vermont and Maryland already allow this, and similar measures are under consideration in Illinois, Maine, and Massachusetts right now.
If the gentleman will yield?
Yes.
I believe those are considerations of allowing votes in municipal elections only.
Right, but thank you. That's the point. Everybody wants to know at home, why would they allow this? Guys, they're allowing it because they're going to turn them into voters. They already are doing this in New York City, largest city in America, and this is the plan of our friends on this side to turn all the illegals into voters. That's it, folks. That's what's going on. That's the game. That's why the border's open. That's why they've dropped it. Look, I respect Ms. Lofgren and all her work in this arena. Yes, I'll yield, Mr. Chairman. I'd love to hear what you have to say about this.
As a New Yorker, I would love to think that New York is the entire country, but it is not. It is not, and consideration is being given to permitting non-citizens to vote in New York, and I believe in the capital city of Vermont. I forget which that is, but it, as much as I'd like to believe it, New York and Vermont are not the entire country.
But, Mr. Chairman, that's the whole point. This is what's going on, folks. At home, if you're trying to figure this out, if you're scratching your heads, you're seeing the video, you see droves of people, 2.4 million people coming over the border illegally, the president allowing, the Democrats in charge of Congress are allowing it. The deal is they're going to turn them into voters. You just heard it. They don't have any problem with that. They celebrate it. Here's the deal.
I mean, that's not a point just because it's only in those two places.
Right.
And we like it. But that doesn't mean it's going to keep happening. If we can sell it, it is.
The only two places that we found, right? The only two places that got brought up during a committee hearing. Like, how many other places is it actually happening? Is it sort of the unwritten rule that's not been codified? It's not been mentioned in front of some committee hearing, right?
Right.
So Democrats know.
And outright what AOC said when she was talking about the problem of undocumented immigrants was just document them. It's just, right. It's just a, you know, it's a bureaucratic holdup.
And you've got people that are going to be voting based only on the fact that, hey, Democrats gave me $10,000. So they have no, like, they're uneducated voters. They have no idea about the other party. They have no idea about anything. But it's like, hey, they gave me $10,000. They let me in this country. They're putting me up in 4-star hotels. Yeah, I'll vote Democrat. Yeah,
I would have to think it's less subtle than that. It's more outright. There must be some kind of paperwork telling them, like, I don't know this for a fact.
Well, we don't. Yeah, I don't have the paperwork. But they know this strategy works. And they know giving out these cell phones to David's point works. Giving out tens of thousands of dollars in free money, free food, free housing. They'll vote for you. They will vote for you. Listen as illegal immigrants are asked why they're voting. It's all about Biden, they say.
¿Tiene derecho para votar?
Que entramos ilegal, por lo menos tenemos acceso a votar.
¿Para quién se va a votar?
John Biden, que nos está ayudando a nosotros pues sí. Aquí.
Yo creo que la mayoría Biden.
Biden.
Biden. Él es el que nos está ayudando por Biden.
Biden.
Por supuesto que por Biden.
Le gusta apoyar a los migrantes. Uh-huh. Sí, es muy buena persona. No, Trump es otra cosa. Ese es otra cosa y ese es otra cosa. Oh,
okay. So, look no further than Texas, though, and Arizona, where as of this morning, Trump holds a roughly 4-point vote. These are the latest numbers this morning, a 4-point lead in polling in Texas, okay? Democrats desperately want to turn Texas into a blue state, and one way to do that is with illegal immigrants. To David's point earlier, you don't need many of them to tip the scales purple and then blue. To Texas to become a blue state, voting for Biden in this 2024 election. In Arizona, it's a little bit wider, 7-point polling advantage over Biden there. Trump has a 7-point lead. Again, these numbers are very close. And then when you consider the margin of error, they get even closer, down like 4 points, right? So again, you don't need very many illegals to vote and tip the scales in your direction. In Arizona, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and you already know the rhetoric that's going to start around this. Anybody who doesn't support the illegal immigrants voting, you're a racist, you're a bigot. I mean, I can already see the propaganda coming out, you know, from Biden. These Republicans don't want them to vote. They're racist. They think these people should go back to their country, yada, yada.
Oh, yeah, of course. In fact, Mayorkas has come out and said, we really don't want to use the term illegal immigrant anymore. And we really should outlaw it. We really shouldn't use that term anymore.
Yeah, non-citizen. Call them.
So in Arizona, you do not need proof of citizenship to vote. Did you know that? When you cast your ballot or mail in your ballot. This is right from Arizona's website. If you want to go there and you can dive deeper into it and you can print out the forms yourself and see them. So a person is not required to submit proof of citizenship with the voter registration form that you fill out. But a failure to do so means the person will only be eligible to vote in federal elections, known as being a, quote, federal-only voter. So, you don't prove you're a citizen. Sorry, you do not get to vote in municipal elections, school board elections, sheriff elections, but you do get to vote for president of the United States. You do get to vote in federal elections.
Oh, okay. Why not?
So go ahead. Show up, mail it in. No proof necessary. It doesn't matter. Instructions on the federal election process. Here, I love this. Right from the federal elections website process here, the application instructions, you know, put your home address there. Don't use a post office box. Okay, yeah, that's right. Don't use a post office box. If you live in a rural area but do not have a street address or if you have no address, please show where you live using the map in box C. You can literally drop a pin on a random spot in box C.
Okay.
Date of birth. Make sure you put your birth order there. Be careful not to use today's date for your birth date. Okay. And then here's my favorite.
You know what?
Hold on. And here's my favorite. Box 8, box 6 is ID number. Federal law requires that states collect from each registrant an identification number. You must refer to your state-specific instructions for item 6 regarding that. If you have neither a driver's license nor a social security number, please indicate this on the form, and a number will be assigned to you by your state. So on your form, you can say, I don't have a number. Give me a number. And I can only vote in federal elections. Go ahead, David.
I was going to say, this just opens it up. Like, you could literally take a whole busload of people and put them in, like, just tons of buses of people and just go state to state to state and vote.
Yeah.
Right. Someone in the chat here, a silver dollar outlaw, says, why is no one trying to stop this?
Oh, well, I refer you to the interview that Tucker Carlson did with Attorney General Ken Paxton from Texas, where he speaks specifically about how attorneys generals at various states have been forbidden by the Biden administration to litigate elections. Full stop. He doesn't explain why. He says this is one of the things that we have been litigating for decades, right? It's not something new since we started screaming about election fraud since 2016. It's something attorneys generals have always been up to. But for some reason, the Biden administration has put the kibosh on it. Now, I didn't bring that clip. I wish I had. But it's a fantastic interview, and I refer you to it.
So, of course, they can't do this alone. They need the help of the mainstream media. And they need the help of the mainstream media to pull off this charade. MSNBC, though, is there to help.
Yep.
If you want somebody to carry the water for the Biden administration, MSNBC is right there for you. They've come up with a new term to describe someone who is angry about illegal immigrants destroying the United States. To David's point earlier, they're going to label you a racist. They're going to come up with some other moniker for you. And, oh, they have. Because if you vote for Donald Trump, you have white rural rage. White rural rage. Say that five times fast.
It doesn't
fast.
Roll off the tongue.
That's like that 30 Rock, the rural juror.
It's when, yeah, Jenna's in a movie called The Rural Juror.
And they're like, why is this movie, no one going to this movie? It's because no one can pronounce it.
No, it's because she's been working on the movie for years, and they're like, we don't know what it's called. We can't understand her, but it's been too long, and now we can't ask. It's like a friend who you haven't asked the question.
The name, yeah.
The Rural Juror.
So anyway, if you vote for Donald Trump, you have white rural rage. Seriously, that's what they're calling now. You live in the suburbs and you're angry. You have white rural rage. Watch.
Joining us now, professor of political science at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, Tom Schaller, and journalist and opinion writer Paul Waldman. Their new book out tomorrow is entitled White Rural Rage, the Threat to American Democracy. And Tom, I'll start with you. Why are white rural voters a threat to democracy at this point? You would think, as we pointed out, looking at Joe Biden's background and Donald Trump's, that the opposite would be true.
I mean, we lay out the fourfold interconnected threat that white rural voters pose to the country. First of all, and we show 30 polls and national studies to demonstrate this, so we provide the receipts in Chapter 6. They're the most racist, xenophobic, anti-immigrant, and anti-gay geodemographic group in the country. Second, they're the most conspiracist group. QAnon support and subscribers, election denialism, COVID denialism, and scientific skepticism.
So, okay. And I'm also going to say, and these guys, they watch Redacted on YouTube. I guarantee you, these guys watch Redacted.
So, you know what those guys are? I have two things to say about that. One is an important grammar, something that bothers me a lot when people say entitled about a book. A book is titled.
Not entitled.
A person is entitled. It means you think you are owed certain things. So do not use titled for entitled. I hate that. Also, those people are East Coast media elites. Can we write a book about them and speak down about them? That's all I got.
So
what I was going to say,
yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to point out really quick, we've got all this propaganda now on the news. I look for this to be the next guideline issue that we're going to be fighting against with YouTube. I guarantee we'll probably, because of this, like what we're saying right now, we'll probably not be allowed very soon.
So what David's referring to is YouTube has their terms of service, which they update every few months, and they add things to it, things that you're not allowed to say, things that they will strike your channel for and all of that kind of stuff. So yeah, maybe they did it with COVID. They've done it with the election. They continue to do it over
Ukraine.
A number of Ukraine, a couple of big issues. They just add these things in there. So to those guys' point, the rural white guys, so you're a xenophobic racist if you care about the integrity of your country and a free and fair election. You're xenophobic. You're a racist. You're what's wrong with this country, apparently. Maybe it just comes down to dollars and cents, rising crime, crushing costs to deal with these illegal immigrants. Maybe they're not racist. Maybe they just have common sense. According to The Hill, first, the vast majority of illegal immigrants don't have government-provided work permits, and it could take years before they get them, if they ever get them. Yet their expenses start immediately. They need food, shelter, transportation, clothing. Many will need health care, all of which cost a lot of money, as the mayors of New York City and Chicago have recently come to realize. So is Eric Adams a racist for saying that New York City can't handle it anymore? Is Democrat Kathy Hochul of New York a xenophobic racist for saying New York is being crushed?
Black urban rage.
Yeah, he's black urban rage. He's an angry black man.
You can't say that, oh, Howard can't. Stern.
I guess we can't say that either. What can we say these days in 2024? I don't know. He's angry. He's black. That makes him an angry black man. Here's a concerned white woman, though, in Denver, Colorado. Denver, Colorado is getting, she has a, this woman, by the way, just watch her. She's so xenophobic and racist, and she has so much white rural rage bubbling up inside of her that I almost had to look away. This is about, she talks about how Denver is collapsing under the weight of illegal immigrants and warns that her way of life is being ruined. And she talks about this as a tsunami that's coming to America. Just listen to her white rural rage. It's almost hard to listen to. She's so loud.
I'm here to speak on behalf of the poor, the elderly, who are struggling because of the issues that you deal with and how you deal with them. So we're talking about a thing that's going to navigate people. I took a look at some figures, and I figured some people here might ought to hear them. If we look at Denver with 40,000 immigrants, and we think that they cost $1,000 a month for housing, it's going to be $480 million for 1 year. That's just $1,000, and I don't think you can get housing for that. If you feed those people, 40,000, at $200 a month per person, I don't think that's possible today, if any of you have gone to the grocery store, that's $96 million in a year. We are headed for a tsunami. I don't think you know what you're heading at. The total of that, $576 million. Your budget, if I am correct, and I Googled it, I might be wrong, is only $72 million. I ask you how you think you're going to afford it. Now, I'm not sure I'm correct on all those numbers, but they're pretty close. Now, personally, I live on a budget of $30,000. My husband was a school teacher, and I worked as for Jefferson County, and I had a disability, and we had to quit. We had our advisors, and they assured us that we were going to have enough money to survive. Well, I'll tell you how I survive on $30,000. You have done such wonderful work with your housing that you have cost my taxes to go up to $4,000. Oops, I'm getting really close. $3,000 for insurance, $3,000 for my car, $10,000 extra. Take that out and I live on $20,000. Now, I have to go to get clothing from the Goodwill. Now I'm so poor I have to repair the clothing. I go to the food bank, and I'll tell you what I see. I see immigrants coming in, jostling and pushing us out as they cut line, take more food than they're required to do, and our poor staff that deals with those things are out of their ever-loving mind trying to figure out how they're going to handle it. Yeah. You ask how I'm coping? For God's sakes, help me.
Oh, bless her. You know, the thing is that I was reading today The Canceling of the American Mind, a fantastic book, a sequel to the Greg Lukianoff book. And they were talking about how it's so fun, you know, for liberals to poke fun at white people because they feel like it's a reckoning that white people have had it so good that they can take it. But specifically when you look at whites, they are responsible for large percentages of what we call now the deaths of despair, deaths of depression, alcoholism, drug use, right? So this is not really a population that it's fun to poke at, white people. There are real people. I know that's so shocking. Real right. People with real problems who have never oppressed anybody before, who have never, like, does that lady look like she's been coasting on white privilege? Really? You know, and so it's not funny. And it's not like this social reckoning to punch at white people the way that liberals think that it is. And the people who say that are an insular middle class societies or above.
It's unbelievable. So she's filled with white rural rage, and she should be ashamed of just trying to live her life. And then she should have some media elites in New York City write a book about her white rural rage. I wonder why she might or may not. I have no idea how she's going to vote. Yeah. Right. But this is their problem.
And just like, think about how many, like my town that I live in right now, those people just deemed a racist town. Think of all the rural areas, these little towns in the middle of nowhere that they just said, they're all racist. Every single one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is like the basket of deplorables by, you know, Hillary Clinton all over again, right? It's right. The flyover country. It's all of the, you know, it's all of the derision you can think of for these people.
You know, I will say that because we worked for the media, Clayton and I, and we, you know, could have been classified as media elites at one time. And I did buy this basket of deplorables line about, I probably would have liked this 10 years ago, white rural rage. Like, oh yeah, this is a reckoning for white privilege. I'm sure I would have bought that shit. But then when I visit family in West Virginia and I sit with, you know, my aunts and uncles who may be accused of this, I felt ashamed of myself. Like, what do I know about their life? That's no place for me, someone who lives in New York City, to say anything about them. And those people, I have to think, who were on MSNBC about this book would feel ashamed sitting at a dinner table with this lady. I have to surmise that that would be true. We had a super chat. Can we read it from the Ascended, please? It had to do with this.
Okay.
Can you read it?
I can read it.
Oh, yeah. You read it. I can't see.
So what about blacks who vote for Trump? Do they have white royal rage? If so, I'm sure they'll gladly accept their white privilege and benefits. Kidding. Joe Biden already told blacks they ain't black if they don't vote
for
him.
No, they're treated as race traitors. And that's why the Democratic Party is so confused with all of these race traitors that they thought for sure were in their pockets.
Yeah.
So this is shameful. This is not a way to talk about other people. And if you are that kind of person, shame on you. We're going to also talk about, we have more news coming up. We're going to talk about, hey, if you're ever invited to a conference call and the subject is killing people, you probably shouldn't go to that conference call because it might be leaked to the press the way one was this weekend by the German military. It's shocking. It proves that they lie to us all the time and they twist their words. They plan things and then plan, like, how can we spin this? We're going to take a look at that coming up. Also, we're going to have a visit from our friend George Galloway about his new parliamentary position, why the WEF is scared, and they should be. Also, anti-wokeness coming to California. What is happening? We're going to talk about that and more. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at Shopify. Because when I started podcasting and, you know, building this network and building what we have here, the last thing I thought about was an online store. It was the furthest thing from my mind. And then people started asking in the chat. They're like, hey, do you guys have like any mugs, any redacted mugs? Do you have any like redacted hoodies or anything like that? And we said, no. Okay, maybe we should, you know? And so we did. And guess what? We set up our store in just about 10 minutes it took us to set it up with Shopify. It was easy. And that's how we run our business. Our store right now is run. Redactedstore.com is a Shopify store. It's that simple to set up and we love it. And it's, you know, it's really fantastic how simple it is. It's a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. If you're just starting out, you know, if you just like launch a product, or you're all the way up to a massive multi-million dollar company, like one of those companies, then Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're delivering daily digests or serving sensational scoops, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person point of sale system, wherever you are, they are there to help you. Shopify has you covered. And you're going to save. I mean, they have the best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. So here's what you need to do. Sell more with less effort, thanks to Shopify. And they have their magic of their AI-powered all-star behind you. So let's talk about how you can get right now, and you can try it out and see for yourself. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period. All you need to do is go to shopify.com/redacted. That's shopify.com/redacted. And someone in the chat says, redacted, is it mugging? mug. No, it's like you can get the redacted mugs. Our redacted mugs are in the dishwasher.
They're in the dishwasher. Yeah, being clean.
But
I like this comment from Kathy. Says they haven't seen rage yet. That's what they think is rage. We're just getting warmed up.
Yes, I am ready.
You go, girl.
I'm ready for this election because holy smokes, tomorrow I'm telling you, Super Tuesday, it's going to be fascinating. Click, click. I can't wait to see what Nikki Haley does.
All right. Well, I've got a story for you that's going to stir up your rage. Are you ready?
Yes.
Do you need a break first from the rage or can we just keep going?
No, I'm ready. I really want to get to this story about Germany. So let's do it.
Why is Germany planning to attack Russia? They are doing that. We learned this from a leaked military call, a call between German Air Force officers talking about how they're planning on attacking Crimea, specifically the Crimean Bridge, because Ukraine wants it because of the political symbolism, civilian deaths be damned. Now, Germany doesn't deny that the tape is legit. In fact, they admit that it is. They're saying, though, that it was released because what they're calling a hybrid attack aimed at disinformation.
What?
None of that makes sense. A hybrid attack aimed at disinformation.
Do they think we're stupid?
Yes.
They really think we're stupid. They think you're stupid. Like, we're talking about attacking the bridge. This is leaked audio in the military, but it's an attack on disinformation. What?
So it's real, but it's disinformation. And I don't know what the hybrid is.
Is it Russian disinformation or just disinformation?
Like, well, specifically, it did come from Russian media. So they're saying they're trying to attack us with misinformation. But yeah, we said all those things.
But they haven't. Yeah. But the veracity of the tapes is accurate and authentic.
So if you ever trust anybody who tells you something is disinformation, let this be a lesson to you. They are lying. And I'm going to show you exactly how. Just a few hours ago, Germany's ambassador was seen leaving the foreign ministry in Moscow after being questioned about Germany's plan to attack Russia. Here he is walking with his head down in shame.
This is Mr. Ambassador. Why are you planning on attacking Russia? Do you want war with Russia again? What would be your preferred target? Reads the subtitle.
Now, when he says, do you hold a grudge? Maybe they mean because, you know, Russia put down your Nazis.
Right.
Is that the grudge that you're still holding? He was summoned because, according to Russian state media TASS, this morning, he's got some splaining to do. Take a look here. He looks like a Dick Tracy character, doesn't he?
He does.
Now, the leaked phone call reportedly took place on March 1st. So just a few days ago, it was published by Margarita Simonyan, editor-in-chief of RT, and Rosia Segodnya from Sputnik's parent media group. Now, this is how it was published. I'm not going to play it for you because I assume I don't speak German. Maybe you do, but I just want you to see it in its original form, and then we're going to look at screenshots.
Und Kamera Fenster, richtig?
Genau.
Jawohl. Wunderbar. Frank, du aus Singapur.
Ja.
Okay.
Sehr gut.
So this was published on the same day that German Chancellor Olaf Scholz assured us that NATO is not going to fight with Ukraine and not going to war with Russia. In this post, this was a video, but again in German. Now, he did this in response to French President Macron saying that he was not ruling out sending troops to Ukraine in true Napoleonic fashion. But Germany's top military officials did not either see this tweet or they didn't get the message, because on the same day, they were discussing attacking Crimea and more. Wait till you see this call. Now, Germany is saying that, again, this is information warfare. Now, this guy that you see here, Defense Minister Boris Pistorius, he said this at a news conference today about the tapes. He says, well, I think the officers did what they're there for. They're thinking through different scenarios without planning anything in any way, and leaving no doubt about it. Neither I nor the chancellor have given the green light for the use of the Taurus. That's the Taurus missiles. Okay, so he's saying it's just like, it's hypotheticals. They're just going through, it's a thought. It's like a trust exercise, basically.
It's just a tabletop experiment where we blow up things in Russia.
Yes,
it's just
exactly.
A fun thing. It's a fun thing that we do.
Now, Pistorius and the Chancellor Scholz are both mentioned in name at the top of this call. So let's just go through it. I've pulled some screenshots because it's shocking. Okay, so one of them says, well, as you've probably heard, Defense Minister Pistorius intends to carefully consider the issue of supplying the Taurus missiles to Ukraine. We have a meeting scheduled with him. Okay, we need to discuss everything so we can start working on it. So far, I don't see any indication of when these deliveries will start. The chancellor never told him, I want the information now and tomorrow we'll make the decision. I never heard anything like that. On the contrary, Pistorius is evaluating all this ongoing discussion. Nobody knows why the federal chancellor is blocking these deliveries. So again, they are talking about it as a hypothetical, but as if like we need to be prepared because they're going to do it at any minute now. They go on to discuss how they'd get them to Ukraine, like on the backs of what trucks, so that Russia might not detect, sort of. They say the British can do it easily because they have several people on the ground already, which we've said, we've surmised a lot. Now, they say they can't guarantee that they're safe. And, oh, you know, if we move too fast, Ukraine might actually kill civilians again. Look at this quote. Firstly, it's about the delivery timelines. If the chancellor decides now that we should deliver missiles, then they'll be transferred through the Bundeswehr. Fine, but they will not be ready for use in 8 months. Secondly, we cannot short the time because if we do, there might be an error in the use. The missiles might hit a kindergarten and there will be civilian casualties again.
Again, he writes.
These aspects must be considered. This again word is key here, you guys. It's key. This is a clear admission that NATO knows that Ukraine has been hitting civilians since the special military operation began and before. We know that. They talk about training and say, well, they need several months to train the Ukrainians on these missiles. They said their people took a year to learn it, but they can maybe squeeze this in with Ukrainians with some translators, maybe in a matter of weeks. They talk about the optics of making it look like they're not doing it. Basically, look, it says politicians might be concerned about the direct closed connection between Buchel and Ukraine, which could imply direct involvement in the Ukrainian conflict. But in that case, we can say that information exchange is going to take place through this MBDA, and we'll send one or two of our specialists to this place. Of course, this is cunning, but from a political standpoint, it probably looks different. They're planning to lie, right?
Right.
I don't see this in any other way. Like, think about if your children say, oh, did you go there with so-and-so? Well, he was there too, but I didn't go with him. So
right.
Technically I can tell my parents.
And it's very openly like calling out that thing where we always say like, oh, we're sending military advisors.
Right.
And this is basically showing what the business end of those advisors looks like.
Yes, exactly. And they talk about how much they can rely on Germans and these guys. The Germans are there. The English are there. How much can we rely on them? And also, I don't know what this means. Let's figure it out together. They say, do you think we can hope that Ukraine will be able to do everything on its own? After all, it is known that there are numerous people there in civilian attire who speak with an American accent. What does that mean? So it's quite possible that soon they'll be able to use everything themselves, right? After all, they have the satellite images.
CIA.
Okay.
CIA.
Let's put some guesses out there, right? They are Ukrainians, civilian Ukrainians, who speak with an accent like mine. So clearly not... Who is that? Those are American assets, right?
Of course they are. Yes, as the New York Times on the front page of their newspaper 2 weeks ago reported... the massive amount of CIA assets that are inside of Ukraine and have been there since the 2014 coup and installed a puppet government. So someone in the chat Peter Schanzel says Crimea isn't Russia. I don't know, Peter, maybe you don't know your history, but in fact, they did vote to become part of Russia in 2014 after we installed a puppet government, an illegal puppet government in a coup in 2014. They said, we don't want a CIA-backed government to lead us, a Western-backed CIA government. That's how... Crimea said, no, we want to be part of the Russian Federation. So go ahead, David.
Well, I was going to say, and we covered on this show back, I mean, at the very early beginning of this, where citizen volunteers were recruited to be sent over there to fight. I don't remember they were like flying them over and everything. So some of those people are probably still, if even that campaign is maybe even still going on. sending people over that want to go fight for Ukraine.
Oh, the mercenaries. Exactly. Yeah. And in addition to that, of course, we have Larry Johnson just yesterday saying that, yes, the NATO forces have been there and they are absolutely there. And they have been on the ground. NATO forces have been on the ground and USA forces have been on the ground the whole time. You'd be an idiot to think otherwise.
All right, let's move over to the Crimean Bridge, a civilian bridge that already was attacked by Ukraine within the last 2 years, resulting in horrific civilian death. But they want more. They want to do it again. So let's talk about this. This is from the call transcript. They're saying, regarding air defense time, flight time, flight attitude, and so on, I've come to the conclusion that there are two interesting targets, the bridge to the east and the ammunition depots, which are higher up. The Crimean Bridge to the east is difficult to reach, and it's a relatively small target, but the Taurus missiles can do it, and it can also strike the ammunition depots. Considering all of this and comparing it to how much the Storm Shadows and the HIMARS have been used, I have a question. Is our target the bridge or the military depot? They literally can't tell. This is the. Do we want to hit the civilian bridge or the military targets? Correct answer, not ever civilian targets. No, that's wrong. You guys, wrong. You got it wrong. They don't know. I don't know. Should we help them hit that bridge? Maybe.
Let's flip a coin.
Yeah, let's flip a coin. They say that blowing up the bridge may require 10 or even 20 missiles. He said, I'd like to add something to the bridge. We've been studying this intensely. Have you, Germany? You've been studying how to blow up the Crimea Bridge? You've been studying that? Unfortunately, it's come to the conclusion due to its size, the bridge is akin to a runway, so it may require 10 or even 20 missiles. So that's a lot. You know, we've been working on this. They say that Ukraine has been trying to destroy this bridge for months now. Duh. Not just because of the war, but they say to prove a point. They're saying, we all know they want to destroy the bridge, which ultimately signifies how it's guarded, not only because of its military strategy importance, which there's not really, but more because of the political significance. Okay, so they're very keen to talk about all these things and how they're going to be presented to the press, how they're going to spin this as, you know, military participation, which is not military participation. It's very clear that they're just used to lying to us about this war. If they've studied this so intensely, this is not just hypothetically, if the chancellor says he wants the Taurus, we'll be ready. They are actively planning it. They have studied how to bring down this civilian bridge. So what are some key takeaways here? I made some notes. First, Germany knows that Ukraine hits civilians often, sometimes due to their ineptitude. The West is pretending not to be at war with Russia, but they know that they're at war with Russia. They actively plan things and lie to us all the time. And then the last one's just for you and me. If anyone ever invites you to a conference call and the subject is killing people, don't attend. Maybe just for, you know, personal savior of your career so you don't get canceled or because you have a soul.
Please invite me to one of those conference calls and I'll record it.
Okay.
And we'll feature it here on Redacted.
But you have to purposely not be caught saying things like, oh, okay, well, you know, we can do that. They might blow up a kindergarten, but
again. You
know, again.
We might hit a kindergarten again. It's unbelievable. And of course, you know, this speaks to the Nord Stream pipeline bombing, right? And the sabotage.
Oh, I'm sure there was a call just like this.
Exactly.
Between some assholes.
They were on a Zoom call like, hey, Tuesday at 2:00 after your schnitzel. Get online because we're going to have a call about blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline. It's going to destroy our entire energy infrastructure here in Germany. But, you know, President Biden wants to do it, so we're going to do
it. Well, I think it wouldn't have been schnitzel because it was Norway, right? It was Norway that participated in the,
yeah,
as far,
maybe,
that's sort of the leading.
Okay, so.
So not
so schnitzel. Currywurst. So
that's some not curry. Norwegian food.
Oh, no, I was saying German food.
Okay,
yeah,
we're German. Derailing. Anyhow, let us know what you think. Do you find these things as shocking as I do because they are so blatant? Shock value on a 1 to 10, this call, I'm at 11, even though I know they know these things. I know they're lying to us. It's just the arrogance with which they say it on a call with four people. That's why I'm so shocked. Anybody, you want to fill up a number?
Well, I think what irritates me the most is that we have that, all of this information, yet people are still going to be like, yeah, it's a nothing burger. It's disinformation. You know, they're just going to believe what they're told, that it's disinformation, and move on to the next thing. And it's like, no, you can hear it. This is what they're doing.
Yeah, they can say that all they want, and they can say try to distract and do whatever they want to do. But, yeah. But Putin over the past 24 hours has been, again, reminding us about what NATO's aggression would mean. And it would mean World War III is what it would mean. It would mean an invasion of Europe, for crying out loud. So they want to keep playing this game. They're going to get stung real fast. And my point about the Nord Stream is, of course, Germany was involved in it. They were fully aware of what was about to happen with the Nord Stream pipeline. And this is why they remain totally quiet about it.
So, and they like schnitzel, which is...
And they like schnitzel, and they like currywurst.
Austrian, I think.
But currywurst, okay. You can get that in Berlin.
Yeah.
In downtown Frankfurt. Okay. Yeah, we've got more news to get to here on your Monday. Holy smokes, it's Monday. And we're going to talk about how the World Economic Forum globalists are running scared of what's happening in England right now. Our friend George Galloway just won the parliamentary election in epic fashion, crushing the competition. This is a real wake-up call for Rishi Sunak and the Conservatives and the Labour Party in England. So we'll get to that just in a moment here. And we're also going to look at San Francisco. You know, you think San Francisco is the epicenter of wokeism, right? It's where America goes to die, basically. And poop. You walk down the streets and just poop on the streets in San Francisco. Like, that's what San Francisco is. Are they now turning a page and starting to go anti-woke? We'll tell you about that. But first...
First, we want to tell you about our friends over at The Wellness Company, because as we all know, the government's goal is for you to depend on them so they can control your lives. Close to 90% of pharmaceuticals in the U.S. are produced outside of the U.S., that should make you feel just a little nervous about how the United States controls access to things that we might need to survive. So what happens when the next global crisis strikes, or when America can't get its shipments anymore? The price of medications rise and pharmacy shelves in America could be empty, but not if the Wellness Company has anything to say. They want you to be prepared. They sell the Wellness Company's medical emergency kit that holds 8 life-saving medications that every American should keep in their medicine cabinet, like having a doctor at home. The kit contains antibiotics, antivirals, and antiparasitics, plus a 22-page guidebook with instructions on how to use it safely. From tick bites to COVID to extreme bioterror events, every scenario is covered. These prescription emergency kits are in huge demand right now, so head on over to twc.health/redacted and grab yours before they're gone. That's twc.health/redacted. Use our code redacted to save you 10% at checkout. Be safe, be prepared, and stay well with the Wellness Company. Kits are only available in the USA.
Well, there is some hope in this crazy world. After all, the WEF globalists, the warmongers in Britain, were just put on notice. Anti-war candidate George Galloway won a crushing victory in the by-election over the weekend, and he is heading back to Parliament, where he is sworn in on this Monday, March 4th. And I can't wait to see what he does in the House of Commons. George joins us now. Congratulations, my friend.
Thank you. Pleasure to be back with you again, Clayton.
Always great to see you, George. And I just can't wait. I have to say, when I saw the election results, I said, all right, George, go in there and stir up some shit.
Well, it's made the best people in the world happy and made the worst people in the world as sick as parrots, as we say in Great Britain. And there's a lot of sick parrots going around in those circles you mentioned, the WEF, the warmongers, the people who wish to take us further along the road to World War III. I hope I've managed to put the brakes on at least a little bit.
Well, I hope that you can maybe knock some heads when you get there and hope that maybe some of those people will come out of the woodwork and say to you, George, you know, I'm on your side with this. You know, maybe you will provide an opportunity for other people to come out and say enough of what we're doing in Ukraine and the UK's support of unlimited weapons and support into Ukraine, Israel's ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. Over the weekend, of course, we saw the United States saying that they are going to veto a resolution condemning the massacre that just unfolded with 1,000 Palestinians surrounding an aid truck. Even though the Israeli Defense Forces have come out and said, yep, that was us, still the United States can't bring itself to admit this massacre. So maybe, do you think in the House of Commons you will start to see people coming out of the woodwork, coming to your side of things?
Well, we'll either have to change the existing parties or we'll have to change them. They'll have to basically adapt to the new politics in the country, where it's abundantly clear that our victory on Thursday was speaking for millions, or we'll have to sweep away the political representation that we have and replace them by new ones. So they can have it either way. There's some sign of the former. The Labour Party in particular will simply have to force their leader to adapt, or dozens, maybe even scores of their members of parliament will be unseated at the general election, which after all may only be weeks away. I know it's hard to imagine that, having just fought an election for 4 weeks, I might have to fight another one 4 weeks later. Although I'm ready, I'm not so sure my opponents are.
Do you anticipate, you know, we see members of parliament like Andrew Bridgen standing up to an empty room, and we herald these voices holding up an individual like Andrew and saying, brave, standing there in front of an empty room, telling us all about the tyranny of what they did during COVID and lockdowns and so forth, showing us the documents. I'm hoping and praying that these rooms will be full soon. I'm hoping that when you stand up, do you get the sense that that might start to happen?
Yeah, it won't be an empty room when I stand up, I can assure you. Even if most of the audience is baying, then at least their baying will be seen on television, and we'll make sure that the constituents of every last hyena that is baying are appraised of the situation, given the footage over and over and over again, because it's quite clear that we're on a roll. I'm a one-man party inside Parliament, but it's already clear that we are being treated as if we were the opposition. And I think that's partly because of our scale, if you like, but it's more about the flatness of the surrounding landscape, the two cheeks of the same backside that I talk about, the fact that Tweedledee and Tweedledum neither is more attractive or in any way different from the other. And that is all now completely stripped bare. It is all now apparent to everyone. The emperor has no clothes. It just needed someone to come along and be elected to say it.
Well, the media really wants to paint you, you know, it's you versus Rishi Sunak. And Rishi Sunak and saying that, you know, this is a dangerous time. It's very, very dangerous. That this is a very troubling, beyond alarming, his words. And you have Sky News. This clip has now gone viral after your victory last week, and where you have a Sky News reporter repeatedly asking you the same question over and over and over again about Rishi Sunak. And let me just play a little bit of that and get your response. Take a look.
I'm standing here at George Galloway's campaign headquarters. The Prime Minister has just said that the election of you to Parliament is beyond horrifying. What do you say to that?
Well, I can understand how disappointed he is about the by-election. The Conservative Party, which is the government of the country, was crushed, not just by me, but by an independent candidate that no one had ever heard of before. Now,
the Prime Minister is saying
you talk
that
as
you
if
are...
this is God. We're talking about little Rishi Sunak in the fag end of his prime ministership. Don't talk to me as if he's come down from the mount with tablets of stone. The things that he says are somehow meant to awe me. They may awe you, they don't awe me. Why are you reheating it?
Because in the light of the prime minister's
Don't keep
statement.
Telling me about the prime minister as if he was Moses.
Do you not respect the Prime Minister?
Do I respect the Prime Minister? I despise the Prime Minister. And guess what? Guess what? Millions and millions and millions of people in this country despise the Prime Minister. I don't respect the Prime Minister at all.
You talk to the parties.
Have to just suck it up. I won the election.
So George, they really want to make it seem like it's you are the opposition, you're the outsider, you are alarming, and Rishi Sunak is the voice of the people, he's the voice of the media, and they really want to set up this battle. What did you make of that? And now that this has gone viral.
Well, somebody wrote that the bell rang, we got into the middle of the ring, I picked him up, turned him upside down, and proceeded to mop the floor of the ballroom with him. And I don't demur from that. It was a good encounter from my point of view. But it is dangerous. It's only dangerous for Rishi Sunak and his opposite cheek, Sir Keir Starmer. It's dangerous because it exposes them. Don't forget, Clayton, it's not just that I won a crushing victory over both of the main parties of the state. The person who came in second place was an independent that literally nobody outside of Rochdale had ever heard of. He wasn't in the bookmaker's odds. He never featured once in any of the coverage of the by-election. And yet he also beat the two big parties of the state. And between him and me, we got over 60% of the vote. Actually, almost two-thirds of the people voting voted for me and an unknown independent. And virtually nobody voted for either the Conservative or Labour candidates. So that's beyond alarming for Rishi Sunak, I'm sure. But what is truly beyond alarming is that our country has been dragged by its leaders and their nominally their opposition has been dragged to the precipice of World War III. Our ships are being sunk in the Red Sea. We're bombing Yemen that we were driven out of as a colonizing power well over half a century ago. We are involved in assisting the Israeli war against women and children in Gaza. And of course, most seriously of all, we are literally on the ground, like the Germans and others, in the war against Russia over the dead bodies of the people of Ukraine, helping to provoke a nuclear cataclysm. That's what's beyond alarming.
And your message, of course, is what carried the day. It's anti-war. It's anti-empire. It's anti-transhumanism. There are two genders. You are pro-law and order. It seems crazy in 2024 that we even have to say that this should even be on the table. But in fact, here we are. I wanted to ask you before we get you out of here, George, you've been a member of parliament seven times, if I'm not mistaken. What do you think has changed now when you enter the House of Commons, when you look back over the landscape? How drastically different is it now when you after you've left it a few years ago?
Well, you know, you took the words right out of my mouth. How amazing is it that I have to defend myself from the charge that I believe there are two genders. I believe there are men and women. I believe that God made everything in pairs. These things are hurled at me by the liberal consensus in the media and in the political class as if they were unorthodoxies of such a horrifying nature that I practically should be locked up. Well, that's the first difference, Clayton. When I first came into Parliament 37 years ago, everybody believed those things. They were the norm. Right. It would have been bizarre to suggest otherwise. But now it's bizarre to insist upon what were once normative orthodoxies. It is an extraordinary shift. I mean, there are other more subjective differences. I don't know if it's the same in the United States, but here in Britain, the political class has got so much smaller. When I entered Parliament 37 years ago, there were 100 men and women of independent mind, of great stature, recognized and respected in the land. And now I'm scouring the benches to find anyone of note, to find anyone that you even recognize, anyone that would be recognized outside of their own street. And they're all hooked up by electronic messenger services, telling them what to think, telling them what to say, telling them when the line changes from 1 hour to the next. They are automatons almost, robotically repeating these same new orthodoxies, which are the very upside down opposite of the orthodoxies in which I believe. But hey, the good news is, outside of the toxic bubble, most people think like you and me.
Right.
They don't think like Guardian leader writers, BBC television presenters, or members of today's political class. Hallelujah.
You took the word right out of my mouth. I was just about to say hallelujah. Amen. Thankfully. And we can't wait for you to stir up some shit. And I will say it's like our mutual musical hero, Bob Dylan, said, you know, things have changed, right? I think it's a long way from 37 years ago. And hopefully you can get back and restore some sanity in the House of Commons. George Galloway, congratulations on the victory. And welcome back to the House of Commons. We're thrilled. We're thrilled. I can't wait. Thanks, George.
Thank you. Love to you all.
Thanks, George. Great to see you. And I love our audience. Loves George. And for people who don't know who George is,
dude.
I know people are like, I've never heard of George before. Well, now you know.
Follow him.
He's got a great show, by the way, the mother of all talk shows. We've been guests on there. But now he's back to Parliament, his seventh time going back. He's like, I'm sick of what's happening in this country, and I'm going back. I got to stir some stuff up. You may have noticed, yeah, I was...
Why did Natalie change? Because we're going to talk about the San
during the
Francisco
interview,
Giants.
Natalie changed into her San Francisco Giants uniform for this next story.
This is vintage.
That's vintage.
Buster Posey doesn't even play anymore.
I know,
it's a vintage Giants.
He's in a nursing home now.
Get out of here. Okay, right, this is not an opportunity for Clayton to trash talk my team. We're going to actually talk about my hometown of the San Francisco Bay Area, and I'm excited to do it. That's coming up in just a second. But first,
right now, I mean, we're seeing a banking nightmare about to unfold. I don't know if you guys have been paying attention to what's happening right now, because we could be headed for bank runs. Ann Vandersteel tweeting about this morning, about the concern about what happens in the next few weeks here. When of course, the stimulus money dries up and we realize that all of these banks are basically insolvent. And if there are runs on the bank, people going to try to get their cash, their fake American currency out of these banks, what are we looking at? Well, $500 billion in currency is currently sitting in these banks. Now, the Fed did a Fed stress test just like last year, and they go, oh, no, the banks are fine. They can withstand up to $500 billion in withdrawals of the top 23 banks. Like, if you go and withdraw this money, the top 23 banks are fine. $500 billion. But there's a problem with that math. Over $2 trillion of currency is in circulation. How do you account for that? Disparity. So we could be seeing a nightmare in the next few weeks at the American banking system, and especially when these bills come due for all of these commercial loans for commercial real estate, that these and interest rates go back up. Get ready. Get ready. That's why we're big proponents of making sure you have some gold, some silver in your account, a real tangible asset. I don't know if you've been paying attention in the past few days. Bitcoin surging, gold surging, silver surging prices because of the demand for these precious minerals. Our friends over at Lear Capital can help you get set up and actually buy some gold, silver, and have it sent right to your house. That's right. In fact, you can get their gold, like silver bars, sent right to your house. This is actual silver. This is 10 troy ounces of silver. And you can have it shipped right to your house if you want. Got some fingerprints on it. I'm trying to get it not out of focus here. My gosh. David, help me out here. Why is this not going into focus? It's going on my beard instead of my... Oh my God, it's driving me nuts. Anyway,
hold it straight center.
Yeah, well, too late. Too late. You were out to lunch. You were going and buying some silver yourself. So go to LearRedacted.com and right now go to their website. They have a free gold report that you can learn about. You know, again, gold hitting $2,100 an ounce. Well, it's predicted by Bank of America and others to hit over $3,000 an ounce. They have a $3,200 gold report that you should go and grab. Just go to their website if you want to start actually buying, converting some of that fake U.S. currency into dollars and into gold and silver. You can do that right now. Call their 800 number, 1-800-613-3557, or go to LearRedacted.com. That's where we get our gold. They're fantastic. Again, they'll ship it right to you. You can keep it in your gun safe if you want to, or you can have it stored off-site in another location. The beauty about having it stored off-site is that you can transfer it pretty quickly to cash if you need to for the purchases of anything like that. You can do it in like 3 days. So LearRedacted.com or call their 800 number on your screen. 1-800-613-3557. Tell them that we sent you. They are patriots. They are fantastic people over there at Lear. So our thanks to them for supporting the show.
All right. We're going to talk about the San Francisco Bay Area, thus the costume change. I'm in a vintage Giants shirt.
Vintage Giants. She busted out the Giants.
Don't say busted about my shirt. Okay. San Francisco. The Clayton got excited over the weekend because I'm sure you saw who was that actress was trending for just
Sweeney?
Wearing a booby shirt.
On
and
SNL?
He was like, look. And so most of the derision of that on Twitter was that wokeness is dead because women can
look beautiful.
Yeah. Be
Imagine
feminine
that.
Again.
Be feminine again. Yeah.
So anyway, we were just talking.
Yeah, look, look, I have a beautiful wife. She's beautiful. She's feminine.
But I like baseball.
You like baseball.
Maybe
and you're wearing
masculine.
A baseball shirt.
I don't know. Okay.
All right, get into it.
Here we go. San Francisco, the most woke city in the world, may be ending the woke era and turning conservative. Now, San Francisco, a lot of times, is the bellwether for as-goes liberal policies. So the progressive city is surprising itself with support of two new propositions and death to woke policies. And this is confounding because we expect San Francisco to do everything except represent the people of San Francisco. So here's a short list of San Francisco's maybe move to the middle. We're going to go over them in detail. Now, first of all, they're supporting two law and order ballot measures, Prop E and F. Also, the new Giants coach is requiring the team to stand for the national anthem before every game if they want to play, full stop. What? Also, a school district in the East Bay Area has ended its contract with an organization called Woke Kindergarten, which was actually a thing. This is going to blow your mind. Watch. Let's start there. The Hayward School District, which is where my parents are from, Hayward, had spent $250,000 to hire a group called Woke Kindergarten. This is real. It's a group by this non-binary person, an abolitionist early educator. That's not a thing. Cultural organizer and creator currently innovating ways to resist, heal, liberate, and create with their pedagogy, Woke Kindergarten. So you gotta take them from their mamas and ideologically indoctrinate them is what this person
purple-haired,
is saying.
This purple-haired person.
One teacher reported that the program was problematic. Was he a racist conservative? No, he was a liberal gay man. He was fired after he raised these concerns. He said that while he supports discussing racism in the classroom, he was told the primary objective of the program was to disrupt whiteness in the school and that the sessions were not a place to express white guilt. He said he questioned a trainer who was using the phrasing so-called United States, as well as lessons available on the organization's website offering Lil Comrade combos or positing a world without police, money, or landlords. This is that video, which still lives on Instagram.
When I think about a world free of state violence, free of war, free of genocide, I think about a world free of the U.S. empire. I think about a world free of Israel. I think about a world free of every occupier that's ever existed. I think about land back to indigenous peoples globally. I think about the fact that we would not have to participate in these systems because none of these systems would exist. That means kids wouldn't have to go to school because the world would ultimately be their classroom. They would learn with us. They would learn from us. We would learn from them. We would create these ecosystems of community care that would make sure that everybody had what they needed so nobody would want for anything. We would hear music everywhere. We would make art out of everything. We'd be able to write so much more poetry because we would have so much joy in ourselves that we would need some place to move it, some place for it to land. The people would have the power, and the kids would have more too.
Okay. See that internet router you have behind you? You wouldn't have that in this new world, or the TV behind you, or most of the things you're wearing that presumably come from Target or Amazon. But cool, you'd be able to write more poetry. Cool, dude. Now, is that too much for kindergartners, though? Do you think that maybe they'd wonder, if you want this world, why'd you come to our school? Because we have to be in school. After this, the school district ended their woke kindergarten contract, but not after this guy was fired, unfortunately. He was put on leave, and then there was a backlash for it. You fired a gay man for saying that this kindergarten is not the place for this. And then they ended the contract. So what's amazing is that they had it in the first place. Is that one woke policy to die on the vine? Let me know what you think. The second is that the San Francisco Giants will now be required to stand for the national anthem before games. Here's what the new team manager has to say about it. He says it has nothing to do with politics. This is Bob Melvin, new coach of the Giants. He says, look, we're a team here. We got some good players here. It's more about letting the other side know that we're ready to play. I want guys out here ready to go. There's a personality to that. Has nothing to do with whatever happened in the past or whatever. It's just something I embrace. So you stand there or you don't play.
I just love it. Yeah. I mean, quite a turn from a few years ago when in San Francisco is, of course, celebrating kneeling.
Yeah.
You know, and defunding the police, right?
Right. How'd that go for you, San Francisco? Right. You know, doing what Colin Kaepernick wanted.
The only time you clean up your city is when Xi Jinping arrives from China and you kick all the homeless people out and you clean up all the poop. There's literally a website.
Or you're an immigrant.
David, weren't you telling us there's a website devoted to poop tracker in San Francisco?
Oh, yeah, there is.
Like where human beings have pooped on the streets so you can avoid that on your
app?
And
basically, the whole city was brown. I mean, if you saw the map, it was just like
disgusting.
All brown.
Yeah. Can you imagine? By the way, hilarious.
Yes, I can. I lived in the Tenderloin. I swear one day when I was going to work, I stepped over an abortion. It's gnarly on the streets
God.
There.
Oh, my God.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I went through the Tenderloin, and it's not any better. That's actually where they're like handing out paraphernalia and drugs to people. Like,
yeah,
here, this is how you fix the problem. Just give them what they want.
Steve Jobs announced the iPhone. There in San Francisco. Little did he know.
Not in the Tenderloin.
No, in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Just get the point. Little did he know that, like, years later, they would be using an iPhone with an app devoted for poop tracking in the city.
Right.
He would have.
Right.
Good thing he passed away. He's like, I never wanted to see that happen to my, you know.
Right. Well, the fact that the Giants can now say this is not a political move was not a luxury afforded to the San Francisco 49ers. They couldn't say, we don't want this to be political. It's just what we do. They were piled on for just saying that. So again, is this woke policy number two to die on the vine? Asking you what you think. And finally, the two policies up for a vote just tomorrow, Proposition E and F. Proposition E would expand police surveillance tools and allow police to use force without requiring written reports for every altercation. So here's a brief summary of it. It says that police officers must not spend more than 20% of their job on administrative tasks, because what was happening was if you even got so much as into push fight with somebody, used any kind of force, it was paperwork, all kinds of reports. Well, now they say you cannot be doing that. You have to actually be out there enforcing the law. And if you have any kind of use of force event, you don't have to file a report unless there's a physical injury or a firearm was removed from an officer's holster. So you also can use body camera footage now, which hadn't, you know, had been on the chopping block, use of drones. So it's like, yeah, police the streets, right? They are actually for it. Here's a summary of Prop F, which would require people to receive welfare money only if they test for drugs. And if they fail the drug test, then they have to go into treatment programs in order to continue receiving them. Well, that's funny because in San Francisco, you know, Michael Schellenberger in his great book, San Francisco, which I'm going to talk about later, he talked to someone who was like, hey, you know, someone who is involved actively in the homeless industrial complex. And he was like, look at all these people. They're dying. They're naked. They're cold. San Francisco's cold. What's going on? Should we maybe help them not take drugs? And this person was like, literally, this is a quote, no, body autonomy. That's what they should do. But whatever you want to do with your body, you have autonomy, right? And so this proposition is saying, no, we're not for body autonomy. We don't want to use our taxpayer dollars to give people to take more drugs. Both of these are supported by San Francisco Mayor London Breed. She's a Democrat, but they call her a moderate. And both are expected to pass. A recent poll by the Chronicle by the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce, found that 61% of likely voters support the two ballot measures. And 72% of them believe San Francisco is on the wrong track. That's because most people in the city in California proper are not actually crazy. I come from California. I'm crazy, but not like that, right? I don't want people to die. It's
a spectrum.
It's a spectrum, right? Yeah, most of them are quite moderate and reasonable. One resident said this to the Wall Street Journal, the pendulum is swinging. It's coming hardcore back to the center. Maybe because residents are just tired of it. Last year, San Francisco had a record 806 overdose deaths. And again, as Michael Schellenberger points out in his book, when you enable drug users, they die faster. Look at this quote. He says, people are not dying from drug overdose deaths in San Francisco because they're being arrested. They're dying because they aren't being arrested. Decriminalization reduces prices by lowering production and distribution costs, which increases use. This was also the case for alcohol consumption. It increased after prohibition ended in the United States. And he gives the case study of Portugal, which is interesting, but we're not going to get derailed there. So again, I just want to say most people and voters are very moderate when it comes to these things, but there's been such institutional capture from very loud liberal institutions that you just wouldn't know it. So is this overall a pendulum shift, or are these things one-offs? Let me know what you think, and I guess we'll see tomorrow after the votes.
Wow. And I think too, like if you look at the, like look at Portland, Oregon, look at these big cities, it's like you have a small percent of people that are the progressives or whatever. But like if you get out in the rural areas and a big chunk of the city itself, most people are liberal. They're more like classic liberals. So I think it's like it's kind of like it's not conducive to everybody that's in that area, because it's like these cities have a concentration of the progressives or the woke people. And so it makes it seem like those areas are, but those are also the bigger voting areas, you know, like where like they control the votes of a lot of things.
Yeah.
So I think that because the rural people are like around here, you get outside of the big cities, everybody's basically conservative.
Mm. Yeah, that does tend to follow the trend. And a lot of people who are liberal, who live in cities, are worried about less like working class type situations. You know, they want to spout their ideology without much life experience. That's usually the case. So let us know what you think. Is San Francisco ending wokeness? Are they turning to more moderate? Is this a pendulum shift to hang a little bit of hope onto? Or
they're
going to
turn that brown map green.
All right.
Yeah. Let us know what you think.
All right. We also have a Plus Club. We'd love for you to join Redacted Plus. If you want to support independent journalism, you can. Of course, it's a totally free show. You get to watch this for free on YouTube or Rumble or X, wherever your little heart desires. Again, it's totally free. We try to put a lot of hard work into this show and to bring value to you guys every day. That's our goal. If you do want to take the extra step and to support what we do here, you can, for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can join our Plus Club. It's Redacted Plus, and you just go over to redacted.inc, not .com, it's .inc, and then you click on Join Redacted Plus today, and you can become a member. You get access to exclusive content, interviews before anyone else gets to see them, live streams that only you and our members get to be a part of, and a whole host of other things over there. Plus, it's a great community where our community members can interact and hang out. So, and if you're on Rumble, you can just click the red join button there for locals. It's the locals community. If you're on YouTube and you'd like to come on over to redacted.inc and join our Redacted Plus community. We really appreciate it. And we'll be back here tomorrow. We are, hopefully you're subscribed to the channel. It's totally free to subscribe. We're here every day, Monday through Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So you can join us. Turn on the little bell notification and you'll receive alerts. But again, we'll be back here tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern time. Help you have a great night, everyone. Tomorrow is Super Tuesday. So let's get ready for a big election day tomorrow. Have a great night, everyone.